Before we get to the podcast, I wanted to invite you to the Pipeline Conference. The theme of this year's conference will be succession at every level. The event will be held October 11 through 13 here in Nashville, Tennessee. The focus of this event will be succession all the way from senior leadership at a church to the preschool and even the parking volunteers. That means that this conference is for your whole leadership team and any volunteers who you'd like to join you. Our speakers will include John Piper, Bob Russell, H.B. Charles, Tom Rayner, and more. Again, this event is October 11 through 13 here in Nashville. We will have separate coaching days on October 11 and 13, with the main event being the 12th. These days provide your team a chance to get focused, engaged training from our team. We have early bird discounts running through July 31st, so there's still time to take advantage of these, along with our fantastic group rates if you want to bring your team. Go to myleadershippipeline.com to learn more about the event and to register your team. Again, that's myleadershippipeline.com, and don't forget to take advantage of our early bird and group discounts before July 31st.
You're listening to the Five Leadership Questions podcast. My name is Daniel Im, the Director of Church Multiplication at Lifeway Leadership, and I'm here with Todd Atkins, the Director of Leadership, and Devin Maddox, who is the Trade Books Publisher at B&H Publishing Group. Thanks for being with us, Devin.
Yeah, glad to be here.
Awesome. I love your bio here. I love your bio because it says you acquire, edit, and leads a team.
That's accurate. And that is
but if I just stop right there, it doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, people ask me what my job is quite often, and it's rather difficult to explain.
Yeah.
And it shouldn't be, because I just make books. That's basically what I do, right?
So you have your calligraphy pen.
Yes. I'm similar to the biblical office of scribe. Yes. That's where I fit into like the structure of our Christian society today.
It is. So you should put that in your bio.
Devin Maddox, scribe.
Yeah. Well, today we're going to be talking about
books.
Yeah, we are.
A lot.
We are. And we're talking about creating a library, or should we say curating a library?
That sounds way more millennial to say curating. Handcrafted artisan libraries.
Yes. All right. First question, Todd.
First question is, what have you been reading recently?
So I've got a book in every bucket at all times. Okay, first of all, let me say that.
In every bucket. A chicken for every pot.
That is what I'm saying. There's going to be a new deal in... No, okay. First of all, Bible intake. You've got to have a Bible intake strategy.
Right there.
And for me...
That's good.
And for me, it's these He Reads Truth Legacy books.
Yeah.
Which basically just break down the Bible into daily readings. There's not really much commentary at all. It's just text. And for whatever reason, for about a year and a half, 2 years now, these things have gotten me into the Word every day, which for me has been a struggle.
That's cool.
Number two, in the area of like scholarship or academics, I've been reading Reflections on the Bible, Human Word and Word of God by Bonhoeffer. Mm. Basically, you've got an editor that's curated some of his primary writings on the Bible into one place. Kind of depressing if you're an evangelical, and makes you realize Bonhoeffer might not be one of us. Spoiler alert. the area of fiction, A Gentleman in Moscow by Amor Towles. This is just crushing.
You're getting ahead of... Well, no, you're not getting ahead.
No, he's reading
this,
it
This
right
is
now.
What I'm
he's
reading.
He's not talking about his best. Okay. He's just reading.
Although some of these might jump onto that, especially this one. So this Gentleman in Moscow book has been crushing the New York Times bestseller list. It is awesome. Hmm. Highly recommend that. Politics, Reclaiming Hope by Michael Ware.
Okay.
You guys know this guy who used to work in the Obama White House in the faith department during a time when there wasn't warm and fuzzies between evangelicals and the president. Mm-hmm. Very interesting insider. I mean, it's basically just like, look, this is what it was really like.
That's cool.
And I read the print edition of the New York Times every Sunday morning.
Okay. Well, I just finished The Upstarts.
Oh, me too.
Yeah, that was a good one. How Uber, Airbnb, and the killer companies of the new Silicon Valley are changing the world. Yeah, it is funny. I'm currently going through Extreme Ownership, How U.S. Navy SEALs Lead and Win. Leslie Newbegin's autobiography called An Unfinished Agenda, as well as Fool's Talk by Oskinus. So that's been neat. Matt Chandler recommended that book when we interviewed him on newchurches.com when we were doing stuff on preaching. And it's been in my library for quite a bit of time. And I just dug into it yesterday. And man, I'm excited.
If you could talk like Oz Guinness, you'd be a better preacher.
Yes. If we could only talk like Oz Guinness. All right, Todd, how about you?
So, I read Growth Hacker Marketing last night, and
like the whole thing in one night.
Yeah, because Dr. Rainer basically 2 days ago said, "Hey, have you read this book?" And I was at an airport, so
dang,
that's how I roll. Okay, and then Upstarts as well. Mm-hmm. I'm rereading almost a textbook from Noel Tichy on Succession.
Okay. All right. Oh, The Content Trap.
Oh, and
I'm doing that. Yeah. That, which was fascinating because I read this section, the chapter yesterday was talking about The Economist and how there's not really these author voices in The Economist, but The Economist has one unifying voice and they don't report on breaking news. They report on their opinion on news and how every Monday they get all together and they just spitball on the news and talk about opinions and they just all go write it.
Well, I did 5 books on Succession very recently because I was doing a white paper for the new pipeline conference this fall, which is on Succession, not Succession at the senior level,
which we do talk about, but not exclusively about, but
Succession at every level because it's not, everybody thinks Succession, they think replacement. They should be thinking reproduction. I won't go all the way there, but it's fascinating to me how I can read a textbook on succession planning, like a business McKinsey type textbook.
Yeah.
And then read like Succession Planning for Dummies, which I did read, and how much overlap there is between That's cool. the two.
Well, they got to get their sources from somewhere, right?
They do. So it was just really interesting, but anything about Noel Tichy, everything he does is art.
Can I interject a question that I'm so curious for you guys? Because I think this is important, like implication of what we're talking about. When do you look, and I know how busy each one of you are.
Yeah.
When do you guys find time to read? And when you said airport, my ears perked up because I know that that's like time when you're not choosing between family and reading. Yeah. So what are those pockets of time where you're just like, this is the best use of my time for a busy person, like a pastor or a church planner?
Well, yesterday, and I have 3 kids, 7, 6, and 2 years old. And when I put my 2-year-old down, I usually stay in his room for about 15, 20 minutes while he's going down, just so he knows someone's there. And that's when I just pull out my phone and I read on Kindle. So I read a few chapters yesterday doing that. Otherwise, I'll typically do it when either at nighttime, there are a few times after the kids are in bed, or other times traveling, or maybe even like a Saturday morning. Sunday on our Sabbath, when the kids are napping, I'll either, if I'm not too tired, I'll typically knock out a couple hours of reading then, because that's filling for me.
Mm. It's kind of like my, not secret sin, but almost.
Not because, a secret anymore.
No. So, I mean, I'm a physical book guy and I always have at least 3 books on my person at all times, in my backpack or whatever. And so it is just, okay, if I have a spare moment, this is what I'm going to do. Or if everything's getting a little too crazy, I know I can go knock this out and feel some sense of accomplishment that I just knocked out a chapter or a section of a book. But it is also like on a Saturday and Sunday, if my kids go down for a nap or they're having a quiet time in their room, that's when I'm looking at that late at night. When I can't sleep, that's when I'm doing that. I'll sometimes switch to, although, you know, I'm not a read it on my phone. I am a listen to it on my phone. Yeah. And so, you know, during cycles or seasons when I'm so ticked off at NPR, I can't listen anymore. I'll listen to books, which right now I'm in one of those cycles where I'm like, I can't, I just can't listen to this. It's ridiculous. Yeah.
It is so hard when you've got little kids and a lot of responsibility to find time. And I'm convicted because Daniel, like when we have bedtime at our house, we do read to our kids, but when they're going to sleep, I'm not so much thinking about making sure they know someone's there as much as I am like locking the door from the outside and like, stay in there. I have all boys, by the way.
Okay. Do you really have your doors flipped?
We don't. Should we?
I'm not outing myself. No,
I don't think you should have your doors
another
flipped.
Another secret sin. We're going to rename the podcast Secret Sins.
When you sell your house, you better flip those or people are going to be freaked out.
I have one flipped. I won't tell you which house.
Well, for me, when I'm flying, especially on a coast-to-coast flight, I can knock out much reading.
Yeah, you're right.
And I don't buy Wi-Fi on planes anymore. I'm just like,
it's so unpredictable, too.
Well, it's like, I wish I could be in contact with you, office, but I wanted to save overhead costs by not purchasing Wi-Fi. And secretly, I'm like, I'm going to read so many books. Because it is really tough at home when you're choosing between we've got a small amount of time at home.
Oh, yeah. Totally.
It's tough.
That's good. Well, that leads us well into our second question, because we've been talking about audiobooks, ebooks, paper books, and what's your preference in all those? And how do you feel the reading experience is different in and through those three mediums?
So I've got three questions I ask.
Okay.
I ask myself, do I want my kids to have this book eventually? Do I want the book? Basically, I'm asking, do I want this book in my house? Two, would I want to give this book away as a gift? And three, would I find this book useful to reference again in my work? The reason I ask, do I want my kids to have this, is because a lot of the books, the best books that I read, I found on my dad's bookshelf.
Cool.
And I like read it secretly, like C.S. I discovered C.S. Lewis thinking that I was being sneaky.
It's a secret sin.
It is. It's more secret sin. Would I give this book away as a gift?
Don't do that.
This is a terrifying podcast. No, the reason I ask it, do I want to give this book away as a gift, is because the best books we ought to give to our friends and order another one. And I've done that, for example, with this book.
You'll give them your marked up version?
No way.
No
way.
Shepherding a Child's Heart, I've done.
Yeah. You gave away your marked up version?
Yes.
I'm vehemently opposed. I've had so many books walk out of my office in a church. Church people who are listening, do not walk into other people's offices, take their books, which they have had handwritten notes in, because that's what the blank pages in the front and the back are for. They're for you to take notes in what you read. And it's basically, you create your own book summary in the front and back of a book. If it's a really good book, you're going to use the front and back. If it's not a good book, you're going to use part of the front and ditch it. It's not worth your time and effort if you make it that far through and you're not getting some out of it.
Sounds like there's a lot of wounds there. Maybe
there are wounds
we could work
there.
Out.
When two different occasions at a previous church, when staff people were leaving and they're cleaning out their office and they do the whole free book table.
Yeah.
And I go and I'm like, I see my books. There's two of my books with my notes in them.
But that's why you got to have a checkout, because that's what I ended up doing. I had a note in Evernote that anytime I gave anyone a book, I put their name down, so I always knew.
Get it back.
Yeah, I want to get back.
No, I love giving away books because and part of this comes to my psychology as a publisher, is like, I look at books as little missionaries, and we're able to send.
Be a missionary every day.
What is that? What did you just do? What is the song from?
I don't know. It's one that I heard when I was growing up.
Wow. I don't.
Wait, what?
That just totally killed my train of thought.
Be a missionary every little day. Is that what you said?
Is that like the IMB?
Be a missionary every day.
1992 IMB. Anyway, so the books are little missionaries, right? We're sending them into these people's lives.
Just keep going. Ignore
it's
them.
Good.
Plow through.
And then the other thing about reference books, that doesn't mean like IVP Bible Background Dictionary, although it could. It means like I reference this so much. I've got to have it within arm's reach, and everything else can be an ebook.
Yeah. How about you, Todd?
Physical.
physical.
I thought I already answered this question.
Yeah, in my, I guess you did read. A little bit.
Why don't you read ebooks?
I just get too distracted by everything else that's on my phone. I mean, you know, notifications or I just don't feel like.
He has ADD.
Yeah, I do. Yep. Bad. So it, for whatever reason, when I have a physical book, I can like plow through it. So, you know, Chandler was with me last night and I say, hey.
Because they were traveling back,
from a pipeline consult. And so I was like, oh, this looks interesting. And then I flip maybe two pages in and I'm like, hey, can I read this? He's like, sure. Do you want me to order a copy for you or do you want me to do it? And I was like, no, I'll read it now. He's like, you're going to read this before we get on the flight? And I'm like, yeah, we got 45 minutes. It's 120 pages. It's not a huge, and it's a small book too. But if I'm able to focus on a physical book, I can read it so fast compared to digital. I just can't, for whatever reason, you know, because when you go through, when you're in seminary and at least in the, you know, I don't know. Mueller was really big on reading. At some point in time, they had to say you can only do 2,500 pages per class or something like that. So I was prior to that. they did that, unfortunately, after I graduated. Wow. But when you read a lot, you learn to read. You learn to read quickly and comprehend better. And, you know, it's deliberate practice, if you will.
Yeah.
And so so I think that's part of it. And that's just how I learned to read. And that's my, like, process.
That's
and
good.
So I do not deviate from a process.
That is exactly why. If I could go back in time to 20-year-old Devin, and I know I'm cheating, but I don't care, I would have given myself, before I went to seminary, the book, How to Read a Book by Mortimer Adler.
Yeah.
Yes. Because that would have...
that.
Yeah, it's one of the best books.
That's also how you get a book finished in 45 minutes, totally. Too, by the way.
Yeah. Because you don't have to read every word.
You don't.
Yeah. For me, I don't read paper books unless someone has given me paper books, because I agree with you, Todd, that the reading experience is a little bit more you have less interruptions when you're reading the paper book. But I found that out of all my paper books, they're not usable after I finish reading them. Now, I'll write notes, I'll underline, but if I really want to use the information, then I'm going to actually have the paper book open and take notes on my computer, which is why I love reading ebooks, especially on Kindle, because after you highlight everything, they have an app where basically it takes all your highlighted notes and I can just put that in Evernote, so I don't need to scribe anything. I just highlight. And if there's like paragraphs in the book that I want to reference later, then I'll just highlight it because it's going to be scraped. The beauty of that is I put that in my Evernote and now it's a sermon illustration or it's something that I can actually use and search. Audiobooks, if there are no charts and it's a book that I just need to get through, if it's fiction, I'll do it on Audible. And every day when I drive home from work, I'm listening 30, 40 minutes to a book.
I'm a podcast guy. I cannot transfer that time that I use listening from, like, I'm choosing basically between audiobooks and podcasts, and I'm choosing podcasts every time. But my wife, I don't know if do moms, like stay-at-home moms, listen to this podcast?
Yes.
Okay. Moms, my wife, who is awesome, she reads about 50 books a year. And she's got 3 kids under 6, all boys. She crushes some audiobooks while she's doing everything.
Yeah.
And she gets so much into her brain that way.
Yeah.
So good.
Well, I mean, it's so easy. Like the Magnolia story, the one with, what are their names? Chip and Joanna Gaines.
Yeah.
So, I mean, at the library, most local libraries, actually, you can rent ebooks and rent audiobooks for free. It just takes months, especially with a popular one. Mm-hmm. So after Magnolia's story came out, my wife went and rented the audiobook. It took 4 months and you have it for 2 weeks. But it took me like 2 days to finish that because it was just so compelling. And I did it while I was vacuuming or all that stuff.
Shiplap. Hashtag shiplap.
So let me ask the third question, Daniel. Have you read everything in your library?
Have you?
No, unfortunately not. But going back to Mortimer Adler's, going back to that, if that was the paradigm of reading, then yes, I have.
Impressive.
But that doesn't mean I've actually read all the words.
Sure.
I know what the book's about.
I had a friend who worked in our Albert Mueller Jr.'s library when I was in seminary, and he said that is the question they get on a tour every single time.
Have you read all the books?
Yeah. Has he read all the, and he's like, well, there's like 10 new books coming in here every day. Mm-hmm. I just told you that on the tour, man. Like, yeah. No. Unless he's been here today, no.
But if you read how to read a book, then you can feel okay just reading the table of contents, getting the gist of the book.
You're like, yeah, define reading. It's like the Bill Clinton, like what's the definition of read?
No, like, okay, so here's it. If I say...
Todd's eyebrows are raised right now. He is serious. Go.
No, I am serious because when I say I read that book last night, I at least scanned every word for sure.
Then so I haven't.
First and last paragraph for sure. First and last sentence of every paragraph for sure. And most of what was in between because it was a short, concise book that was written. I mean, even if you read, he told you how he wrote the book in order for growth of his own personal brand and blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. Own personal marketing business. And he says, hey, I've distilled down this book. So when it's distilled down, if it's that kind of book, man, it's really, I want to read all the words.
Yeah.
Most books, I'm reading the first and last sentence of every paragraph and then figuring out, do I want to read this paragraph? Yeah. But I do it so quickly and I've trained my brain in that way.
But you can't do it with a disorganized, poorly written book.
You can't. You cannot.
This is true.
So you know what happens to those books?
They don't get published by B&H. That's
never. You get rejected before it's ever written.
All right. How about you? Have you?
So there is a big section of my library where I've dabbled only in a volume, and that is in these sets of books. So you've got
the full leather sets.
You've got like Kyle and Dillich and Calvin's commentaries and the early church fathers.
Oh, the early church and Nicene fathers.
It's like I've read Augustine, but like the rest of the church fathers have never heard from me. Yeah. So,
but commentaries and dictionaries, you don't like, they're not intended to be read word for word anyway.
Right.
I mean, it's a reference work.
So besides that, though, I have. Well, the book doesn't go into the library until it's been read.
Okay.
So I would say, I have a home library and a work library. Home library is shared, and I definitely have not read all that's in there because there's lots and lots of stuff that I will never read. Mm-hmm. My wife is always reading a couple of different Bible studies at any given time, and sometimes a couple of books at any given time. I'll probably a lot like your wife's, but we both went to seminary. So she collected a ton of books, through that process and then has continued. And we go through constantly having to curate and get rid of stuff. But everything in my office, I've definitely read most of what I read in my office, probably at least half of those that are currently in there, I've read twice. So that's we've talked about that on the podcast before. I think a year or two ago, early on, we did one on books with Geiger, and I talked about how, it says a lot about you, not only what books you read, but what books you reread. And it's really important to think about that too, because a lot of books are worth rereading.
Yeah. Well, this is a reading culture. That's not us. I don't think that's a phony thing to say about Lifeway, at least in the past 5 years, especially. There is an unwritten syllabus of especially leadership books. Mm-hmm. It's like, if you haven't read Ram Charan, like you're kind of left out of the conversation.
That's true.
Yeah. Or if I'm in a meeting with Dr. Rainer and he says, have you read this book?
That means go and read it.
Go.
That's an unfair contest with Dr. Rainer because he's read a lot of books. Yeah.
But when Dr. Rainer Instagrams or tweets out a photo of what he's reading, you're right. I just go straight and I'm like, okay, I'm going to read it.
That's what I need.
Yeah. So how do you go about creating a library then?
Well, curating my handcrafted artisan library. Well, first of all, I feel like leather-bound sets of books have gotten a little bit of a bad rap so far on this podcast, so I'm just going to confront that.
No. Faux leather-bound.
There is a there's a lot of books in my library that are there not only to be used, and they have to be useful to get into my library, but there are some books that ought to be beautiful. We just completed creating this series of books called the Legacy of Faith series, and they're Christian classics. Years ago, B&H did this, and they created like a limited like 1,200 of them. There's like sets of them. Cool. And the people that have them now are basically seminary presidents, college presidents, leaders of big Christian organizations.
And so if you want to be one of those people.
Yeah. Well, you can't get your hands on the old set.
Okay.
They're gone. People email us like, you know, once every couple of months. Hey, I'm trying to hunt those down and I can't find them anywhere. Oh. It's like, well, that's because we only did so. So we're actually bringing that back now.
Okay.
And, there's going to be a limited number again, but they are both useful and beautiful. So you've got Spurgeon, you've got Chesterton, yeah. Edwards,
you have
John Chesterton. Bunyan. Yeah. And I, what I like about them is like, I might not read that version of Pilgrim's Progress in that set, like, cause I don't want to, but something about being in the same room as those books remind me of something while I'm working with my beat up Bunyan.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't even know what that means.
Pilgrim's Progress. Not, I don't have a Bunyan that I'm, yeah. It's like not like a foot
the
Bunyan.
Classic. Yeah.
All right. Right. So I would say this, if you looked at our library right now, there's a section that is the great books. And that is a nice section. We send our kids to classical school for a reason. I mean, you know, those things are really, they're kind of important to us. And those are, we've read all those books, but we don't read those books. And just like what you're saying, hey, this is something that is nice. I want my children to feel free to go in there and grab them. And I only have one that really is old enough to do that right now. But I want them to in the future, and I want them to appreciate I really want them to appreciate it, and I want it to be something that they have.
When you grew up, did you have a reading home? Like,
yes.
Were you guys readers?
Yes. So my dad was bivocational, but he had a really strong library. And so, you know, it was a lot of the B series from Warren Wiersbe and Chuck Swindoll and stuff. But the B series is really hard to beat, in my opinion, coming on early as a student pastor and stuff that I may have dated myself in a major way there, but that stuff is really good. It's gold.
I think what you're doing with your kids in terms of creating like space in your house. I mean, we have a room too at our house that it's like our kids who are six and under who can't, they're illiterate kids. Hopefully they will become literate soon. They will say that's the library.
Yeah.
And you know, I'm a reader because my parents cared about reading. Mm. There was one place I could go in public where it was like, you can buy whatever you want. And that was the bookstore. And I think that's why part of the reason why I'm in publishing now is because when we went to Book World, which no longer exists, it was like, you get anything you want. So I was just grabbing all the Goosebumps I could find. You guys remember those? Yeah,
I read those too. I think I read the whole set.
Yeah, it was like the Stephen King, juvenile Stephen King, which my parents weren't thrilled about, by the way. But yeah, I think that's why I'm a reader. My parents clearly valued it.
All right. So as we come to the end of the podcast, let's do some, you know, really quick fire favorites. All right. So let's go theology. All right. So no explanation, just your favorite theology book. Let's go all around. And then we'll do different topics.
Gospel of the Kingdom, George Eldon Ladd.
Oh, shut up. Because I was going to say A Theology of the New Testament by George Eldon Ladd.
My book's way smaller. Get my book to start.
Yeah.
Listeners.
I'd go Hokomo.
Is that a Pokemon? Okay, checking.
I know Hokomo, but what's the title of the name? Title of the book?
Image of God, I think.
Okay. All right. Church practice.
Ooh, Center Church.
Oh, that's a good one.
Designed to lead.
You get a raise and you get a raise and you get a raise.
I'm a church member. Let me get through the no, church practice, I would say probably one that's...
Designed to lead is good though.
It's super good. I don't know. Anything, it would be a toss up between you know, Malthus and Carl George and pretty much anything either one of them have written. This present future was really a big deal for me. Some of Stanley's books, Seven Practices, was big. Next Generation Leader was big. Because that's when I was coming up. I mean, you know, and so those had a huge impression on me and what leadership was and what it could look like and being able to blend. At that point in time, I think is the first time where you started to see guys that would blend theology and practice well. And that's one of the things I like about Design to Lead. I think that if you're a theologue, you can't look at the book and dismiss it as just pragmatism.
Yeah, that whole conviction section establishes that.
Yes, that's good. And they start that from the beginning. So, all right.
My favorite is Communicating for a Change by Andy Stanley. Man, it's just, I use it every time I preach, every time I communicate. It's such a good framework. All right, next one, leadership.
Oh, I already started in on leadership.
1 minute manager, Blanchard.
Yeah.
There's nothing there that's like going to blow your mind. Like no one has ever thought of this before, but it's every day I use it. I use it every single day.
That's good.
I'm going to go Oswald Sanders, spiritual leadership. It's just I don't know how many people through it. I don't know if it's hundreds, but it's over 100. And so it's just, short chapters, if you actually read the scripture that goes with it and walk a person through it, it's a real game changer.
That's good. Mine is Strengthening the Soul of Your Leadership by Ruth Haley Barton. It's one of the few books that I've read multiple times over and over again. So
I read that book.
Yeah, it's very convicting. And it was timely.
But it's a leadership book.
It's like leadership slash spiritual formation. I've mentioned it on this podcast.
Ooh,
before.
This is getting real in here. Yeah. Temperature just went up.
All right, fiction.
Hobbit. I just finished reading The Hobbit to my kids. Nice. So it has been reproduced, to use some pipeline terminology. Todd, that was for you. Taxonomy.
I'm going to go, I don't really read fiction anymore. It's really sad. Actually, I did last year read some Sherlock Holmes again. After there were no more Sherlock Holmes series, I was like, oh, I need to go back and reread that again. And then there's autobiographies. We should ask about autobiographies.
Oh, yeah. Let's do that after.
Okay.
All right. Mine is, I love the C.S. Lewis Narnia, the entire series. It's fun. But the most recent one that I've read, which I cannot put down, was Hunger Games.
Oh, man.
The trilogy. It was insane.
Jesus.
I had not read fiction for like 6 or 7 years. And I'd picked up that book and I just could not put it down.
Were you convicted by Barnabas's Curious Christian? You're like, oh, I really should read some fiction books.
Yeah, it does help the curiosity.
Well, I really do think leaders need to be reading fiction. Mm. I don't think that is a part of your brain that is shut off from leadership. I don't think you can be a good leader and not be engaged in beauty in general.
Yeah.
And I think that that's what fiction, I mean, if you're going to cast vision for an organization, I mean, you have a weak imagination.
Yeah.
Come on.
Oh, I have a strong imagination.
All right. Autobiography or autobiography or biography.
Oh, either one. I'll tell you one that I'll just throw a random one in here. The Green Hills of Africa, which is Hemingway's only autobiographical work. It's, of course, about a safari that he and his wife went on, and it's pretty good. Mm. There's another biography by another famous safari guide, Peter Chapwick. That's Death in the Long Grass. That's also fun.
I've only read part of that Hemingway piece, but there's a book that's edited called Hemingway on Writing, where they take excerpts of a lot of, and I would recommend that as well. But I'd really love to dive into that.
All right. How about you?
Okay. I get asked the question all the time. What do you think of Eric Metaxas's
Bonhoeffer
yeah. biography? I mean, like, as soon as you say, yeah, I'm working on a PhD on this topic, that's just like where they go.
Yes.
And I'm not going to answer that question on this podcast.
Okay.
However, I will say that the biography
because of politics
it's not let me say this about okay. the Metaxas, but I'll give a little piece. That book has done more to make people aware of the life and ministry of Dietrich Bonhoeffer than really anything else. Yeah. And the fact that people recognize his name in America is in no small part due to Metaxas. So don't hate on him too much. But if you wanted to go, and this is the biography he would recommend
yeah.
if he wasn't selling his book. Eberhard Bethge wrote, who is Dietrich Bonhoeffer's best friend and the guy okay. who actually compiled and curated all of Bonhoeffer's works into German, wrote an 1,100-page biography.
Okay.
And it's, I mean, that's the source material for everything else.
Yeah. Okay. That's good. Well, I probably shouldn't share what my favorite biography is after you said that. So we can go into the next question.
No, you can't just let that.
Okay.
If you're running right now and you're listening to this podcast, you're yelling like, Daniel, come on, man.
Okay. Because I don't typically read a lot of biography and autobiographies.
You read Neumann?
Yeah. Yeah. That's not a good read. It wow. isn't. No, it's not a good. I will select. There are a few individuals that I'm like, I'm going to read everything I can on that person, partly due to John Piper's influence on how he's just like, hey, pick a guy, just learn as much as you can. So Jonathan Edwards. So Leslie Newbegin is the person for me.
It's a good choice.
I'm just reading and doing all that. But the biography is horrible. Like it's really hard to get through.
Well,
the autobiography.
Do people on listening to this podcast know who Newbegin is? Because I didn't even hear of him until I started PhD studies.
Yeah.
They do know?
Probably not. I don't think. I've mentioned him on our New Churches podcast, but not too often on the Bible, too.
There's so much there because here's a guy who delayed his his academic fame to go be on the mission field in India and really didn't become known until he came back.
Totally. And I mean, he was the one who said, hey, I know all the foreign missionaries get drivers and all this special treatment, but I want to live like the people. And there's even this one story where these missionaries would actually be driven into different tribal areas for the day. They would be with them for a couple hours and then leave. And he was like, no, I want to walk there like everyone else is walking there. And it's going to take 2 days, but it's the conversations that I have where I can disciple, where I can connect. Wow. And I'm going to go there and be with the community and then come back. I don't want all the special treatment. So the guy's legit.
He's theory and practice. He is as important intellectually as John Stott. Yeah. is to missiology. Yeah.
That's good. So that's what I typically do, but my favorite biography that was written by anyone was Metaxas. It was well written.
There is nothing wrong with that.
Yeah.
Because here's the thing. There are different subgenres of biography.
Yeah.
And by the way, the guy writing a dissertation on Bonhoeffer, that's not like, I mean, I'm looking at it through the lens of like this clinical cold. Okay. But I mean, take for example, what's the guy who wrote the John Adams in 17th? David McCullough.
I love McCullough.
McCullough's not a historian necessarily, but it makes history come alive.
Yeah.
Metaxas is very skilled at
that. Yes, he is. All right. And last, Rainer book. What's your favorite Rainer book?
Oh man.
I thought you were going to ask vampire book. What's your favorite vampire book?
I've never read a vampire book.
Stoker or.
Okay. I have read that. I have read.
Twilight even a book?
Is it a book? Yeah, they do have. Know. Yeah. Yeah, they do books.
Let's
go Rainer book.
Oh, yeah. I'm a church member. Easy. Okay. That book took basic theology of church membership that and made it accessible to so many people. It has been a gift to the church.
I like Who Moved My Pulpit because I would always recommend Leading Change by Cotter to pastors. Yeah. But it's actually, I mean, it's a great book and a great framework, but it's not accessible. It's not as accessible as Rainer's Who Moved My Pulpit.
Well, that's what he does.
Yeah.
He makes things accessible.
And it's
that's why he's Rainer.
Fast. It's a fast read and you can just implement it right away. So I like that one.
I mean, that's why he's Dr. Rainer.
Yes.
Boss daddy.
Yeah.
I call him Rainer. Okay. I would have to go Simple Church.
Okay.
Great choice.
Because it covers two things at once. It covers Eric Geiger and it covers Dr. Rainer.
All right. Last question.
Last question is, what book would you tell your 20-year-old self to read?
Already did it. Mortimer Adler, How to Read a Book.
Yeah.
Wow, that you can't.
No, it was. I mean, that's good.
We're so different and yet similar.
That's true.
Is that what you were going to say?
That's why we're such good friends, Todd.
I've said that one before, I think on the first one. But so I'd probably go back to Spiritual Leadership then, Oswald Sanders. I really do think that that is a classic book. I used to use that and Maxwell's 21 Laws, because basically one has 22 chapters, one has 21 chapters. And it's great to say, hey, I want you to read both of these in tandem. Because one's really practical and one has a lot more spiritual elements to it. And you can draw those things out and it doesn't, you know, cost them a ton of time to read a chapter in each one, each week.
That's good. And mine would be The Advantage by Patrick Lencioni.
That's his best one.
Yeah. And part of, I mean, it wasn't around when I was 20, but part of the reason I'd recommend that is because there's a lot of other books that I read to try to get to the point where he just really communicates organizational health and change in a concise manner that just makes sense. So it would have got me there way faster, but I love that stuff.
Okay. I know we've gone over, but I have one more question for you guys. I'm so sorry. What have you learned from this podcast right now? How will it change, or will it change anything that you are reading or thinking about reading? Or,
well, the whole fiction thing.
Yeah, that's what's convicted
that, me. That convicted me. Yeah, because I usually don't. The Hunger Games. I wish there was another Hunger Games. I'd devour that right away.
Andrew Peterson has some books that
my Edge family, of Darkness.
Yeah.
That plug to the Rabbit Room. Go visit therabbitroom.com.
Yep. Yep.
I've got to follow through on Hemingway. You have provoked me to a good deed in that way. I'm gonna
the
have
podcast the was worth it then.
As a guest, I'm gonna try to attempt to stage a coup and have the last word. So this is happening. This is happening right now. There is a website, legacyoffaithlibrary.net, right? Isn't that the URL? There's a video on there that shows these books I was talking about earlier.
Yeah.
You just have to go see it. It's really impressive.
Is this who did this? Is this B&H?
B&H did it.
That's okay.
It's worth a look.
Yeah, you have to go there.
Can we put it in the podcast notes?
legacyoffaithlibrary.net. We'll put it there. It's good.
Go see it. Thank you guys for having me.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I'm glad we were able to do this.
Yeah, you guys are uncomfortably close together now. Seriously, thanks for having me. Thanks for doing this podcast. I'm a listener before I was a guest, so thank you.
Good deal. It's great to be here. Come back anytime. We'll have fun.
Thank you for listening to the 5 Leadership Questions podcast. Don't forget to visit myleadershippipeline.com to learn more about our fall conference, October 11 through 13 here in Nashville, and to take advantage of our early bird and group discounts. Again, that's myleadershippipeline.com, and the early bird deadline is July 31st, so move quickly to take advantage of these discounts.